Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone LA Podcast, episode 55 for September 14th, 2009. Brought to you by Radio Voice. All right, it is time for the iPhone LA Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and we are here to talk about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, iTunes 9, the App Store, all that stuff. With me here, as always, is Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Michael. As always, woohoo, glad to be here.
I love how, you know, the listeners don't know about the pre-show stuff that we do, but I'm talking as a normal person, and then all of a sudden I launch into radio voice.
You did, maybe I should do radio voice.
Hey,
you,
Michael, it's great to be here.
You did it too. It's infectious. Radio voice is infectious. And also here is Mr. Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. Hopefully I don't have radio voice. I don't think I do.
I don't think you do. You have very casual, soothing Adam Christensen voice.
Adam Christensen's voice.
You're very upfront, honest, and just straightforward person. And so your talking voice and your radio voice are the same. Then there's
people like me that apparently have to use a different voice when we get on the radio.
Because we're on the internets now.
It always feels weird. And now, I think it's the rogue. I was going to say it's the rogue Amber Ale that's helping me tonight.
Ah, okay. I just assumed it had to do with self-confidence.
Yeah, no, we're not supposed to do the drinking mention.
We're not supposed to talk about the fact that we drink because it makes us sound like losery nerds, I guess. I don't know. But let's get on.
Hey, I am.
With,
I can't change who I am.
Yeah, well, we love you the way you are,
who
Adam.
You are.
Yeah. Uh-oh, I should mute. That was Alex talking about what time it was. So let's launch right into it. We've had about a week now, a little less than a week, to play with the new toys. The iTunes 9, of course, was released last week, as well as iPhone 3.1 and new iPod Touches. Have we looked at the have you guys checked out the new iPod Touch? I have not.
I haven't been into an Apple store. I was camping all weekend. So I went last week to get a new Nano to play around with, and that's about it.
And you want to jump in with your thoughts on that before we move on from the Nano?
No, I mean, I talked about it on my show. I'm running through some tests and stuff like that. I just shot some video on my camping trip, so I'm going to compare, hopefully, and get these up sometime in the next week, although I'm going to try and track somebody down to do some side-by-side because I don't own Final Cut Express or anything. I want to do kind of the three pane things so you can see them side-by-side. But between the Flip Mino and my iPhone.
Yeah, because you have
the 3GS
now. I have
to say, initial impressions is that, you know, I thought at first when I was first shooting video, I put some samples up, that it was very good. I thought it might be as comparable as the iPhone 3GS, but I think it's actually probably going to come in third. It seems a little soft. My initial impression is that the video is a little soft, and I have a feeling that's probably a little bit due to the, you know, just the size of the sensor and the amount of quality that can get out of it. But it is impressive on that front. And then the only other comment is that the colors are just amazing. I love the color of this thing. Every time I ended up with a red one because I wanted the yellow, but they didn't have it in 16 gigabyte. So it was red, purple, pink, or what was the other color they had? Red, purple, pink, or I can't remember that one they had.
There's
in
green
stock
and blue.
Gig. No, well, my store only, they were limited on the 16 gig. You know, for me, it's like $30 more and you get double the storage. That was the other kind of surprising thing that I didn't really realize at first. You know, it's only double your storage, $30. I don't know, you know, how many people would buy the 8 gig. I think they mainly did that for that to say, hey, we have this at $149. It's the same price as a Mino, you know, a Flip Mino.
Do you, have you tried the radio feature on there?
Oh, that was the other thing that did impress me. And I talked about this on my podcast because, you know, I kind of thought, you know, we talked about it even on our show, you know, why does it have the FM thing in there? And what I didn't know at the time we were doing our show, it has live pause.
Yeah, you can pause and
I missed
the
that
DVR
on,
thing.
Yeah, I hadn't listened to the keynote yet. And it was like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So it tunes in really great. It's pretty easy to control the presets. I mean, the controls are really great, but I was really impressed that it had the little live pause feature. And the tagging is nice, too. I guess if you listen to FM radio, I just don't listen to FM radio, so it's not going to be one of those features that I really use a whole bunch, but I was happy to see the live pause thing, because I think that's useful for people.
Can you record from the radio, or is it just the live pause?
No, you can't. Now, and I'm sure that's a whole music industry, RIAA licensing thing. Yeah, I don't know for sure, but I can only imagine that if they tried to put that feature in there, they would have troubles.
Do you think that this would be a good feature for the iPhone? I mean,
the FM radio.
I mean, it's been... Is this the only... Really, Is this the only iPod that has ever had a built-in tuner?
Yeah, and it's the only one I expect to. Again, for a lot of the reasons I think we talked about last show, I really think it's one of those features that's really appeals to people who are using this for working out, for exercising.
Right. Right.
You know, and so when you run out of music or you get tired of your music, you have something to flip over.
Or if you're if you're at the health club or the fitness center. I don't even know what they're called. I've never been to one, obviously. If you're at 24-hour fitness and you're on the treadmill, sometimes they have you tune in, right, via radio.
For the TV, if you want the TV. So, but the color's impressive. The whole package is just really nice. It's amazing everything you get for the price point. And, you know, I watched some movies on it. The one thing I'm not sure about in... I couldn't remember how much I charged it before I took it on my trip, and so I probably didn't fully charge it, but I did have the battery die on me pretty quickly.
Oh.
But I don't think that's normal.
Were you recording video, though?
I think I didn't charge it all the way. Huh?
Were you recording a lot of video?
No, not a ton of video. I mean, I shot some video. I watched. I do think I flipped on a TV show, an hour-long TV show, and left it on, but I noticed, like, in the morning it was, you know, 20 or 30%, and I thought it had a full charge before I left, but, again, I bought it Friday.
Have you tried Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday, I guess it was.
Have you tried the pedometer thing?
Not tried the pedometer thing. But it's cool that it's in there. Again, another thing that just points to me to say this thing's really targeted at someone who has a really active lifestyle and wants an iPod.
I wonder how well that would actually work because, you know, I guess you would assume that the iPod would be on a wrist or an armband, right? When you're, you know, tracking your steps, I guess. I wonder how well that would work from your arm as opposed to, you know, the Nike Plus is on your foot.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I went into the menu and you have to, like, plug in your weight and some other stuff. So I just haven't set it up yet.
Yeah, yeah. It's a Nike Plus feature, though, right?
No, the thing is just built in.
Well, no, I mean, it's a Nike Plus. It's packaged as a Nike Plus thing.
Oh.
Right,
it ties into the Nike Plus web service, but I don't think you don't need the
sensor.
Yeah.
So I wonder, Jeff,
I'm assuming that there's the little accelerometer thing that's in there,
right? Yeah,
is just sensing the change in motion.
Okay, so Jeff, do you know if because I'm looking at it and it has the little pedometer, the shoe option, as one of the photos for this iPod. And, of course, I'm not reading
it. You want me to try it real quick? I can turn it on and walk around the room for a couple minutes.
Sure, go for it.
Yeah,
Jeff, do you think that you would need this extra sensor to actually get a good reading on a workout? Or, I mean, I'm not sure why you would need the extra feature.
I don't know. I'd like to play with one and then compare it to the data that you get from a Nike Plus. So like go and do a run and I have this and my old Nano with me with a Nike sensor plugged in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it does have, like I said, it has the, get your Nike Plus shoes and your Nike Plus, you know, sport kit and all this other stuff, get it together and, you know, go for a run and set it up and do the, you know, the Nike thing, even though it does have the built-in pedometer. I don't know. I mean, it can't be as accurate, and that's probably why they're still marketing it.
The other kit works with other devices.
And it also tracks your heart rate, right? The new kit, supposedly, that they're going to be in.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So what'd you find, Adam?
Well, I found that I walked 31 steps and burned 2 calories, and all I did was turn it on and put it in my pocket. So
high five. I wonder how well it'll work on your arm, but
This was just, I mean, literally just thrown in my my pocket walking around.
I mean, so. they do the same thing with the Wii. You know, the Wiimote, you throw it in your pocket and you go for a walk, I guess.
So it works.
So, yeah. Okay, cool. So, Jeff, have you had a chance to play with the iPod Touch, the new one?
I have. And it, you know, it looks exactly like the one that it replaces.
Sure.
And for the things that I was playing with in the Apple Store, I wasn't seeing any change in performance. But then again, I wasn't doing stuff that's really graphic intensive, like playing a lot of games.
So you were looking at the 32 or the 64 gig, right?
I was looking at the 32.
Okay, so it's because the 16 was not bumped. And the only thing that was actually bumped in those is the graphics processor, right? Not the actual CPU.
I don't think the CPU was bumped. But if I'm wrong, I'm betting someone will let us know right away.
Yes, they will. And, you know, to do that, send an email to podcast@iPhoneAlley. But you didn't see any noticeable change?
No. And, you know, it felt really snappy, which I would expect because it wasn't loaded down with a bunch of extra junk like my iPod Touch is.
Now, I can't remember. Has the iPod Touch received the same hardware bump as the 3GS? As far as the CPU and having it, I mean, is it a 3GS iPod, or is it slower than the 3GS in just standard navigating around and all that stuff?
I couldn't tell that much of a difference.
Okay, because like you said, it wasn't loaded up with stuff.
Right, and it may be that with the processor that's in the new Touch versus the old Touch, unless you're doing very specific types of things, you might not see a difference in performance.
Sure. So iFixit got a chance to take apart not only the new Nano, but they also took apart the new iPod Touch, and they found that you know, if we're talking about similarities here between the 3GS and the Touch. The new Touch actually has a new Broadcom chip in it. The 3GS has the 325. The new Touch has the 329. And the 329, unlike the one in the 3GS, that actually supports 802.11n in the new iPod Touch. It's obviously not turned on. I don't believe it is anyway. Does 802.11n, that takes up more juice, right? That consumes more power.
I think significantly more from what I understand.
I'm not sure if they would actually enable that. I don't know what the benefits... I don't think the benefits would be great enough in an iPod to do that, but it is interesting that they've added that. They've also found that there was, in fact, space for the camera that we were all expecting and supposedly was pulled at the very last moment from the new iPods. Now, the thing that interests me is why they didn't say, okay... New iPod Touch will have a camera. It'll be out, you know, in November.
Well, because no one's going to buy a Touch between now and November.
Yeah, they'd kill sales for X number of months.
True. So you think they're going to come back in November and do it, or are we going to wait for the next cycle, the next event?
I think it'll be the next event. If they can't come out with a Touch with a camera that soon, there's going to be a lot of really pissed off people.
Right, yeah, because they bought the new Touch and then, oh, there's a camera in the new one. So
it's never stopped them before, though.
This is true.
It hasn't, but they're less likely, I think, to do that considering they've been burned a couple times with iPhone updates and changes. Yeah, you remember the whole thing with the 4 gig iPhone?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
I mean, there are still people that will bitch about that.
Yeah, absolutely. They also found it, not only is there room for a camera, but they've decided that it's not a large enough space for a 3GS style autofocus camera, but it's definitely enough room for the new Nano style video only camera. Which makes sense, you know, that'd be a good differentiator between the Touch and the iPhone, because if you can't take stills with your Touch, then, you know, obviously that's an advantage that the 3GS has.
But I think that's the problem. That's exactly why they didn't, I mean, they would have just thrown that that sensor in there if that's what they were planning on doing, and if it fits. So I think it just points to prove to say they're looking to put, if there's space for a camera in there, they're looking to put something in that's more, does stills, has autofocus, you know, and
you think
maybe that's the problem, is they were just having trouble with whatever sensor they picked.
So whatever sensor they wanted to do, they wanted to have a still camera in there, but it just wasn't working out for that form factor at the time.
Again, purely my theory and speculation, right. But that's my gut feeling. And I, you know, based on everything I've read, it just seems to click and make sense on a lot of levels when I'm looking at it.
Sure. Okay. So any other thoughts, Jeff, on the new Touch?
You know, I think the new Touch is a nice upgrade. But it's not something that if you already have a Touch, you should rush out and buy.
Right. Yeah. So I have a friend who still has the 160 gig iPod. And he initially bought it because he really liked the idea of putting all of his music on an iPod. But now he's since then purchased a 64 gig Touch. Because, you know, he doesn't care so much about having all of his music with him anymore. What he really wants is all the extra stuff that comes with the Touch. So he's really looking forward to the fact that he can, you know, obviously go to the App Store and get all the apps and stuff. So that obviously, yeah. You know, like they said, they're marketing the iPod Touch now as more of a pocket computer / competitor with the DS and PSP.
Yeah, and your friend, he's a perfect example of what I'm assuming is Apple's target market for the Touch, at right. least for upgraders. You know, someone that may already have another iPod, they're not going to be getting an iPhone.
Right.
But they want more than just the click wheel thing that they've been handling. Or they've decided, yeah, I don't need to carry my entire library all the time, but it sure would be nice to do some other things. Here you go, have an iPod Touch.
Yeah, because it's a great media device. For one, it's, you know, it's the iPod, it's the best media device around, you know, and it has the added benefit of, you know, mostly for, you know, for games and of course productivity and whatever else. So I think they finally found, you know, it's interesting, you know, when they first introduced the iPod Touch, it was kind of a, you know, okay, they've got the iPhone, but it's not a phone, and it didn't really have a place yet. I think they kind of let the market decide what the iPod Touch would be.
Yeah. I think the iPod Touch, they had an idea where they wanted it to go, but it's kind of an organic thing too.
Yeah.
And they wanted to see where people were going to take it. And so then they put the two together and we saw how they decided they would run with it on the 9th when they showed off the new Touch and did their big focus on games and made fun of the sub notebooks.
Yep. Yeah, it's a fantastic device. So we want to talk about more of iTunes 9. So we've had, you know, like I said, we've had some more time to play with everything. I am not as cynical about it as I was last week, because I've had some time to adjust to it. I feel like it's still, you know, actually, I feel like it's
slow.
It's slow, but it's not as slow as I thought it was. And it could just be, you know, they're updating their, you know, JavaScript stuff because
it's
obviously powered by JavaScript. Okay. So what parts are slow? The store or the,
everything in general. And I don't really know why. That's the thing I can't figure out. And, you know, when you were commenting on it, your impressions last time we spoke, you know, I hadn't really experienced that yet, but now having had time to use it, I'm more used to the user interface like I thought I would be. You know, that's not bugging me as much and I'm finding my way around through things. I still kind of argue that a lot of the changes seem to be made just to make changes. I don't really understand the rationale. I don't understand how it is now makes it better than it was before per se. And I think it just confuses the average person. So I still think, you know, question that decision, but
well,
I'm getting more comfortable with it.
The one fact that, you know, if you're on iTunes 8 still and you go to the iTunes store, it will be, you know, the previous version of the store. So, you know, if you're going to upgrade your iTunes, you're aware of that fact, at least at some level, and encountering a change, not only after seeing the main interface of iTunes change, but then going into the store and seeing, oh, okay, they've changed stuff. I think they're, you know, the fact that they're aware of the fact that it's changed obviously triggers the, oh, okay, I get to see, oh, okay, I see how this works now. You know, that kind of discovery type of thing.
Yeah. But like even poking around in my music library, and I don't have the hugest collection of, you know, I know people who have collections 3-4 times the size of mine. And it's just, I'm seeing pinwheels, I'm seeing things slow down, yep. I'm waiting a lot more.
Well, a lot of it
I just don't understand why, because nothing's really, you know, it's just browsing my music, and I don't know what's changed there to cause that.
Well, I feel, again, and, you know, I'm the guy who, you know, beats the cocoa drum here in iTunes, but it's still a Carbon app.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of bloat to it. You know, I ran XSlimmer on iTunes 9, and it was, I think, 150 before I ran XSlimmer. It's now, let me look, 41 megs.
Holy crap.
It dumped, 110 megs. You know, from all that PowerPC / Carbon, well, not, obviously it still has the Carbon stuff in there for the Intel, but it's still, you know, it's a bloated app, and obviously it's still running slow for me because it wasn't running that code before, but it kind of talks to, you know, what kind of bloat is still in iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like just the features. If you ignore the fact that it's kind of slow, especially the new features in the store that you can hover over and, you know, get a preview right from the top charts, or, you know, you can click the little eye on the album and see a little preview, a little quick look. That's great. I love that idea. You can sort it even right from that little quick look. You can sort it by, you know, track name or track number rather, or, you know, the popularity of the track. And that's usually what I like to do if I'm discovering a new artist. I feel like the artist pages have been changed a lot, and they're still a little weird. You know, if I go to, you know, Weezer's artist page or whatever, it feels a little more scattered as far as the layout, and the fact that it doesn't have that little, half and half organization as it did before, you know, with the tracks at the bottom portion of the window, taking up that portion and then scrolling up above that. The fact that the tracks are now just kind of part of the page, that's a little weird to me. And again, I guess this is stuff that we're going to get used to. And I also feel like they're throwing more stuff on the page. Now, whether or not that's a good move or not, is, I guess, yet to be seen. For one, you know, that it puts more of the content right in the face of the user, although you have to scroll more. So it kind of, it shows that there's more content in the iTunes store than in previous iterations of the store, which I guess would be, you know, Apple's reasoning for doing some of the rearrangements and that they have done.
You know, I think that we're still looking at, an app in progress.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the big thing for me is that it just feels unfinished. And I think that they got everything up and in place so that they could do their rollout on the 9th. But I have a feeling that there's a lot of people working overtime on cleaning up and refining everything that's there. At least I'm hoping so.
Now you're talking about.
I'd like to think that all these inconsistencies in the interface and page sizes will be gone soon.
Now, are you talking about the store or?
Oh, I'm talking about the store in general.
Okay.
The app itself. Well, of course, that's still a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm expecting that we'll probably have an update before too long for iTunes 9 that cleans up a lot of the stuff that's still left inside the app that they don't really need to have.
Now, I feel like someone definitely mentioned this last week, and you guys can tell me who it was, but it's like a move from OS 9 to OS 10 kind of thing, because there are a lot of really nice new features, like we've been saying, in the store now. You know, like I'm just figuring out this now in, if you go to a, you know, like I'm checking out Office Space right now, and before you would actually have to load up a whole new page to go through all of the reviews. Now you can just hit next, and it just does a nice little Ajax load up of a different page without actually changing the entire contents of the window, you can flip through, you know, those reviews quite easily. And so it's kind of a, you know, they've put all the new technology in place. A lot of the stuff in the store can, you know, be updated just by, you know, sending a new version of their JavaScript library to the server. And, you know, obviously some of the stuff in the actual iTunes app would have to be done through an update. But obviously the most significant stuff is the store.
Now, Adam, was it you last week that was saying something about how iTunes feels like it's Apple's testing ground for future interface updates?
No, I think Michael mentioned that first. Or did, maybe I did.
I think
I get confused. You know what? I said that, and it was based on something somebody said on the Mac Jury podcast, and I don't remember who specifically said it, which is the unfortunate thing. I can't give credit to whoever mentioned it, but if you go listen to that episode, the last two episodes, I think it was split into two parts. Somebody on there mentioned that.
Okay, well, yeah. We'll give you
credit. It was me. No, it was me, but on this show, but it was via someone else's comment.
Okay. So anyhow, I was thinking about that over the past week. Yeah, I know it's a shock. I actually mull things over and yeah. Anyhow, and I have a feeling that you are right. And I'm going to temper that though with the interface changes we're seeing with the application itself and with the iTunes store. I don't know how many of those are features that Apple's going to roll out system-wide, but I have a feeling we're getting a taste of what they're going to be doing with future versions of the iLife and iWork apps.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that some of what we're seeing with the iTunes Store right now will eventually find its way to the iWork service, because that's still in beta as far as I know. I haven't bothered to check on that for a while.
I'm gonna take this in a slightly different direction. There was a very interesting blog post by the guys who from PowerEbase. Did you guys see this? I don't know if I included this in the show topics, but they've seen a 20% to 30% sales drop of one of their applications. I assume it'd be Notify Me, but they've seen a 20% to 30% hourly sales drop since the release of iTunes 9. Incredibly significant drop. And they believe that the reason for that is the new layout of the store. Now, if you look at it, if you go to the App Store section of iTunes, you know, there's a new layout, but previously on the side, there was a list of categories, right? And you could click, oh, okay, I want to go to the productivity category and check that stuff out. And So it's for a long time, developers have, you know, it's not as big a deal to be on, you know, the App Store front page as being on the front page or in the top, you know, 100 whatever of your specific category. So, you know, their application is in productivity. But here's the thing. They got rid of that little column on the side of the front page of the App Store where you click on a category. And now I think we all understand how to get to that by clicking the little arrow, right?
Right.
But it only shows up if you hover over it. And then you have to be smart enough to actually click the arrow and not click, you know, just App Store. So then you can get to productivity. And so that's why they think they've seen this huge drop in sales. How do you guys feel about that?
I hadn't thought about it. But then again, typically when I'm using the App Store, I'm looking for something in specific.
Right.
And I'm just going in and searching. So I just brought up the App Store just to take a look at how it really does look. And yeah, I can see where they would think that, because all of those categories, yeah, where do you find them now?
Yeah, and I'm just skimming through this blog post. I should have read it before we started, but they're also saying that there's no subcategory for the games category. There's no way to access those subcategories.
Yeah. You know, I'm wondering over the next month or two if sales will start going back up as people get more familiar with the new layout and get that the little disclosure triangle. If you click on that, you get to see the menu below each of the buttons.
Or if you hold down on the actual button, not necessarily clicking on the little arrow, but there is actually, I'm looking now, there is a subcategory for the games.
Yeah, it's way down at the bottom.
It's way down at the bottom, yeah.
Under more games in the right-hand column.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. This is the first time I'm kind of thinking about it now that you've mentioned it. I'm like Jeff. I mean, when I'm going to the App Store, I usually know what I'm looking for, or I'm doing a search, or I'm still looking through the top lists. What I'm noticing here is, in a given category, I guess the top charts are there up there again on the right-hand column, sort of becomes your one-stop shop once you're in a category for drilling into it. What I'm wondering is, does this make it less gameable?
Uh-huh.
From a you know, charts perspective, so you're not going to get up there kind of on that front and center page, does that change at all? No, I guess it really doesn't. The one thing I'm noticing is in the old layout, didn't they have free apps on one side, you know, the top free apps on one side in a category and the top paid ones on the other side?
I believe they did.
Now they're all vertical again, so the free apps kind of get buried below the fold, at least in my screen.
Right. Yeah, I don't even see the entire top paid apps list.
Without scrolling.
Without scrolling, yeah. I can see down to number 8. And
the one thing that is better, though, is when you drill into that, and I noticed this in the podcast section, too, when you're looking at the top podcasts, they now just use the little square icons, and they can fit way more of them. They're smaller icons, way more of them when you drill into that, you know, so you say, show me all the top paid apps, and I'm getting like 35, the top 35 in one shot, whereas before, I think you didn't get that many.
Oh, because they're using a slightly smaller
section, you maybe got 12.
Okay.
Yeah. Which that I kind of like.
Okay, yeah, that's cool.
I'm seeing some weirdness happen on my page. There, I don't know. One of the rows is kind of broken. But yeah, it's there are a lot of really interesting changes in the store, and I mean, obviously they're all for good. They tried to actually make it for the good because, you know, Apple makes money on these too. But, you know, like we've said, it's kind of a new thing, and they're going to have to improve it over time. And I think that the fact that it is it's a web page, that's, you know, that's where the iTunes Store kind of benefits, is that you don't have to send out a new update to the actual application.
Right. And that is cool because that makes it much easier for Apple to manage improvements to the store.
How come apps didn't get the little sharing thing?
Didn't they?
That's what I was wondering about. No, the little drop down, you know, like Twitter this app or share this, you know, send this to.
I see that. If you're on the, I'm just looking at the top charts here. So let me see. I'll click the T-Pain app. Okay. It doesn't have it if you go to the main page for it, but if you... Now, does that happen if you go to, like, an artist, like an album for an artist or something?
Yeah, the album page has...
It has the old, just the Buy Now button. Yeah, they didn't redesign the pages as they did with music.
Oh, and you know what? It looks like they haven't finished even with the games pages, or maybe it's just loading weird in my... Yeah. So look at the entertainment category is way different than the games category.
Oh, really?
Within apps, and which I hadn't noticed before either.
So they haven't even finished stuff.
Most of the categories have have the old design style, it looks like.
And, okay, so if I go to entertainment, yeah, it's the old style. And if I go to games, it's significantly different. Wow.
I don't know.
See, there's still a lot that needs to be cleaned up.
Okay, so we'll revisit this in a couple weeks then.
Hopefully they're working on it.
Hopefully they haven't just gone on vacation.
Adds to the confusion. This is kind of what I'm talking about, whether you're like moving things around and changing things so dramatically, and then to not even have it. I didn't even realize. I mean, maybe that's Apple's point, is, you know, most people aren't even going to notice this, but I hadn't really been paying attention, I guess, and noticed that different sections didn't even match up. You know, some were kind of the old style, some were the new style.
And we're going to try and get the guy from Powery Base on maybe next week. I tried to hit him up this week, but he didn't respond to my Twitters. Adam, you actually, we got an email about a comment you made a few weeks ago regarding the syncing of iPhone 3GS videos and photos. You want to revisit that? And
this was the problem that you got video on the iPhone, and it was the whole management thing. And I still think it's kind of not done 100% correct. I mean, they've fixed the problem, and the basic problem I was complaining about was, so you dock your iPhone, you have to transfer your videos like you do your photos into iPhoto. Once you've done that, you have the option, and it'll ask you, do you want to keep these on the phone or do you want to delete these off the phone? Well, if you delete them off the phone to regain space, which becomes important, especially if you have an 8 gig, iPhone or 16 gig iPhone, something like that, you might want to reclaim that space. But then there might be certain videos from, that you've shot that you always want on your phone because they're your favorite videos. And there was no way to have them sync back onto the phone through iTunes. And they did fix that this time around. So now you can go into your phone. I think it's in the movies section. Hopefully I can remember with the new, I'm trying to remember where the setting is. But there is a setting now where you can sync the movies you shot that are in your iPhoto library and have those sync back to the phone automatically. So I thought there was an option, or maybe it was a one of the pop-ups that one time says, do you want to have these available to sync back? I can't remember how it worked. But the point is you can see them in that movie library now and you can check them off, or you can have them all automatically sync back. And so I appreciate that addition because you can get them back on there. Because the only other alternative before was to kind of pipe them through iMovie, because you had an orientation problem too. And I haven't checked to see if that's fixed.
I'm not seeing the option. You're saying that there's an option under the movies tab?
No, I think they automatically just show up. Sorry.
So if you've imported it from using iPhoto, imported a movie from your phone using iPhoto, it'll automatically show up in the movies?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the available movie libraries. I think that's how it works. I'm looking at mine now, and I think I see those videos. Is that right?
I haven't tried it yet.
I might have to go back on that. I see my iPhone videos, several of them, and I think they're all sitting in my iMovie library.
You're seeing them in under the movies tab, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Sorry. I mean, we didn't. This wasn't in our topics beforehand, so I didn't kind of get organized on.
Yeah, we didn't mention it last week because
the fact that it is back in there, though. I mean, you do have now a way to manage, and I believe that they just show up. And I thought it alerted me to the fact, like the first time, I thought I remembered seeing a dialog box, and I just can't find it right now. That said something about, do you want to sync your iPhoto, your iPhone videos back to your iPhone?
Yeah, this is, we got that tip from Blake, twitter.com/Murdy.
Oh, here it is. Sorry, it's in the, this is why I'm confused about it. It's in the photos section.
Aha, that makes sense because it's from iPhoto, right?
When there's iPhoto and there is a checkbox that says include videos.
And it's that's only from those specific albums and events that you check, right?
Well, yeah, and then the new one you have, you have albums. Yeah.
Yeah,
so if you have videos in the album that you're syncing and that checkbox is checked, they will sync back to the phone.
Cool. And I want to mention this because I found out this, I think we all probably have a lot of fun with smart playlists, and smart playlists are, you can do a lot of stuff with these. Have you seen that you can actually nest rules now in smart playlists?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So bring up a smart playlist or create a new one. There's the plus minus button next to each rule, but then there's this new button. It's three ellipses, and you can now nest within those even if you want. You can just continuously nest rules into your smart playlists. So you can make some really, really funky smart playlists that do interesting things. I haven't actually had any time to play with it and make, I couldn't think of anything immediately like, I need to do this now with it. But, there are definitely people out there who will use this quite a bit.
Huh, I need this in mail.
Yeah.
Oh my God. This is fantastic. I hadn't noticed that before. And, I'm all excited.
Yeah. And well, I mean, the smart playlists, I think that was the thing that kind of got smart folders and all that stuff into like Finder and Mail, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I think we're going to start seeing that kind of stuff maybe in some updates later on into the OS. And but it's really cool to see it in iTunes. So it'll help out maybe with some auto syncing onto your phone with music and all that stuff.
What yeah. else okay. That's have? Very cool.
So, any other thoughts on the iTunes 9?
The only thing I'm a little disappointed with that feature, Michael, is it doesn't look like they give you the none option, which you can get when you do the nesting in the Finder Smart playlist. And I don't know why that is, or you know, smart folders.
What do you mean?
You guys know how to get to that, right? In the Finder, so you have none of these. You know, so you say I want this, this, and this, but none of these. If anything that meets these, you know, this criteria, I don't want any of these to match. It's like the not.
You get any and all.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And in the Finder, you can, if you click the little plus symbol while holding down the option key, it turns into, it looks like in Snow Leopard, it turns into an ellipsis. I don't think that was there in Tiger before, but you could do this in Tiger and Leopard. And when you click that, you get the nested, the same, similar nested option. And you have any, all, or none.
Cool.
Which the none is very valuable.
You'd have
when
to
you're
do
trying
that.
To exclude a subset of something.
Right. You'd have to set everything to is not instead of just one universal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, gotcha.
So I mean they have a way, yeah, I guess they kind of have a way around it in there, but
okay.
Just one it sure more would be nice to have the none option.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I use that all the time in the Finder. In my smart folders in the Finder. Find it very useful. But yeah, I mean, to your point, you're right. I mean, a lot of their rules you can say is not equal to this.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of solves the same problem, which is probably why they left it that way. It just kind of simplifies it.
Yeah. Have we had any more chance to play with the Genius Mixes? You guys, Jeff, or have you played with the Genius Mix and how do you feel about it?
I synced them to my phone. I mean, I kind of figured out on the show, but yeah.
Yeah, it just fills up your phone completely.
Did I comment on that here? You know, I think this is one of those features that is just one of these things that they throw in there that they play around that nobody really
it's a
uses.
Playground kind of thing.
You know, I'm actually really enjoying the Genius Mixes thing, although I have no intention of sending any of the Genius Mix stuff to my iPhone.
Yeah, that's dangerous. I mean, doesn't it give you a continuous...
Yeah.
I mean, you just fill up your phone.
Oh, yeah. It'll fill up your phone and data's going to spill out of the headphone jack all over the floor and it's going to be a mess. But the way I'm using this right now, it stays on my computer. I don't sync any Genius Mix stuff with my iPhone. And it's actually very cool
because
I have all these different preset genres that it took care of. And when I'm writing, depending on what I'm writing and what type of deadline I'm working on, that will determine what type of music I want to listen to.
Yeah.
And so I have this playlist and I just select the one that's appropriate and I let it go. And it's great because then I don't have to pay attention to iTunes anymore. I just let the music do its thing while I do my writing. So I'm really enjoying Genius Mixes, but I can see why there's a lot of people that would say, well, I've already made all these great, smart playlists. Why would I ever want to use this?
Yeah. I want the subservient Genius Mix.
Which is what? Which would be
I mean,
what?
I want a little more control. Like, I don't want it totally auto. That's one of my complaints
that's
as
true.
I'm playing
it's,
with
it's
it. Like,
very...
So it has preset categories. So I have like three rock, but I can't rename them, right?
You can't rename them. It just kind of looks at your music.
I can't redo
says...
new ones. I can't say, oh, you know what? I don't want five rock mixes. I want five electronica, you know, dance mixes, or I want
12 electronic dance music dance mixes.
Yeah, so I want so that's what I mean by the subservient.
Yeah,
genius.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it doesn't have any
like,
rules.
Yeah,
it's
you're
very
a genius,
up in the air.
Do what I say.
Yeah, you. I mean, it's literally like here's a category. It's not incredibly descriptive. Hit play, and you're gonna get what you get. I mean,
but that's the point of the genius. I mean, the genius is. It's going to go through, analyze, and I'm sure it's figuring out based on percentage of types of music in your library,
sure.
You know, which ones it builds out. So, I mean, they're trying to put some artificial intelligence behind it. I just wish if I could dumb it down a little bit and say, oh, I want, you know, this, this, and this. Go ahead and figure out the music for me. But I guess that's what the Genius playlist is for, right? So yeah. Apple would probably say, well, that's the Genius playlist, and you can do that, and you can say, you know, give me 500 tracks of Genius playlist in this genre, and you can name it whatever you want. So this is kind of Apple's playground to say, this is us playing with our engine technology to figure out how smart we can make the Genius thing and if it works for people. And I'm sure they're going to get a lot of great feedback about it and tweak it and continue to improve it. So
yeah, I think it's exciting just because it's a neat new technology, and they're obviously playing with it, and I'd like to play with it a little bit more. And I feel like the Genius has gotten a little better, both on my phone and on iTunes. I think it's getting better a little, you know, little by little. It's picking songs that I don't mind hearing next to each other, you know, because I'm one of those people who generally decides on an album that I'm going to listen to and starts playing through that album. And I don't often, you know, pull up a Shuffle or a Genius.
That's true. I tend to use the smart playlists that I've made and just stick with those. However, I have been enjoying the Genius mixes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have to play with them more because I'm a total iTunes DJ guy. I use that all the time. I just hit it and let it play.
Yeah.
Okay. And I've almost never used iTunes DJ. So maybe it's a preference. You know, some people prefer letting the music group and play one way, and other people prefer it a different way. And now we have options.
Well, yeah. The DJ is just basically my form of Shuffle. You know, it's like put the thing on Shuffle. It's easy because I can just hit that playlist and hit play. The nice thing about the Genius Mix is it's iTunes DJ within a genre with smartly selected, you know, tracks that go together.
Right, yeah.
Right.
That's really how I view the Genius Mix. It's like iTunes DJ, but in a genre and a little bit smarter.
Right.
Now, what I found interesting, and I don't know if it's just coincidence or if Apple really made it work this way, I have 4 rock playlists that Genius Mix has made.
Yeah, it's like
they're
that
grouped
for me.
Together. So it's like the bottom right hand corner in the grid, all 4 of the playlists right there. So 2 in the, or they're all in the last 2 columns and bottom 2 rows. All of the rock mixes are together. And then my jazz and punk mix or mixes, those are off to the side of that. And then there's the classical music. So, and then the electronicas are together. So I found it just very interesting. That's how everything ended up in the grid, as if Apple was smart enough to say, okay, so we'll take all of these types of mixes and put them together so that they're not just randomly scattered throughout the mix. Or throughout the grid.
Didn't happen like that for me, but that's cool.
Me neither.
Maybe Apple likes me more. I don't know.
Yeah. They definitely like you more, Jeff.
I have rock. I have like 6 rock mixes, and I have 1 with an alternative and punk mix in the middle, and then rock 2, rock 3, rock 4, rock 5, and rock 6 are all grouped, and then it just gets totally jumbled from there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I want to play more with it because it's fun to see what iTunes just kind of groups together, because there's a dance mix, and I've got an alternative and punk, electronica, dance mix. Interesting. Okay, so let's move on, because we've, you know, we've all... You know,
we killed iTunes 9, didn't we? We beat that to death.
Yeah, okay, so also introduced last Wednesday, we talked a little bit about it, iPhone 3.1 brought a lot of fun stuff. We can talk about our favorite finds and little things in there, but there are bits to cover as far as news. iPhone 3.1 blocks encrypted exchange email on non-iPhone 3GSs. And do you use Exchange at all?
I do use Exchange. Now, I don't know that I've run into this specific issue.
Well, you have a 3GS, though.
Yeah, I do have a 3GS.
And so I guess people have reported that on non-3GS iPhones, and I guess the iPod Touch as well, if you're using encrypted exchange email, it will not work. And I guess it had been found that the proper encryption support in the hardware was not there for the other devices, and it was implemented incorrectly in 3.0. And so they fixed
interesting.
It. There was a bug
so they,
before,
they
and they fixed
it, and now it looks like it's broken.
Right.
Okay, that's funny and sad.
And so the only fix for that to actually get your email for those devices, you have to turn off encryption. So there's that. There's also on a line
so
of
it
email.
Should, they need to make just the fix for that is they need to go back and make it smart enough to know, okay, you're not a 3GS, so we turn this off by default.
Yeah.
Maybe or just don't even show the option.
Maybe
turn it off and don't even show the option to turn it on.
Yeah, put a switch in the iPhone OS so people can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, 3.1, according to our own Jeff Gamet, fixes the deleted email bug.
I heard that too.
Yeah, according to our own Adam Christensen as well.
There you go.
I probably heard it from Jeff.
Jeff is making up all the rumors. At some point, we're going to figure out that that's where all the rumors come from, is Jeff.
It's a lucrative business.
Yeah. So the for people who aren't aware, it's something that I think Macworld initially publicized. Essentially, deleted emails could be found using the Spotlight feature, and they were still on the device for some reason. And now that's
keep in mind that's only for POP email
accounts. Only for POP
accounts.
Email accounts, yes. And so I wasn't actually able to test it because I don't have any POP accounts.
I'm coming more and more to loathe and despise POP.
Oh yeah, it's horrible. But I did.
I have switched. I don't have any POP email accounts anymore, and I haven't for over a year now. And it was a very liberating thing.
Yeah, for the someone left a comment on that story that we posted. Someone said that. Well, they said that it has not been resolved in 3.1 for them, but it was resolved in 3.1 beta 3. So
a very interesting,
it may be a glitch on, you know, just their, you know, one experience. But from what you've heard, Jeff,
and from Adam, what I've heard, it's working. Okay,
cool. Okay. So that has been fixed. Also, there's been some coverage on Safari's new anti-phishing feature, which was, that was introduced in 3.1, right?
Yes.
So the anti-phishing feature that, you know, lets you know if you're on a page that's just, you know, constructed for phishing. People were initially saying that it was spotty and inconsistent and not actually working on everybody's iPhones. Apple released, they released a message on that saying that it only starts working after you update to 3.1, plug in your phone so it's charging, and then have it turned off, you know, for a specified amount of time so that it's not, because it has to download that information from a database. And so they left it off until you had it plugged in and you weren't using it.
Right. So, yeah. So like if you charge your iPhone at night, you should be able to just plug your iPhone in and let it charge. And when you get up in the morning, the database has been downloaded, everything's fine, and you're good to go.
Now, how do you determine whether or not that is actually working?
I have no clue.
Okay. Is it, I'm looking through here in the settings. There's a fraud warning option now. I don't think that's been there. If you go into settings Safari, do you guys have that?
Hold on. My iPod Touch was within reach. I'm checking that.
Yeah, so under security, it says fraud warning, warn when visiting fraudulent websites.
Yeah, the fraud warning. There it is. Okay.
So I guess that's it, the indication whether or not it's working on yours or not. So if it's not there, you know, plug in your phone, let it chill for a while, and it should have downloaded that in the background.
Now, do we know a website we can use to test phishing without...
JeffOrama.com?
That's right. Just put in your credit card number. It's okay.
Yep.
I need to plow through my settings menus more often, apparently. How long has the databases feature been in there for a while for the local... I'm assuming those are the local MySQL SQLite database files.
I feel like that's been there since 2.0.
Probably has. That's so funny.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, Google and i.word.com and mail. I'll do that for me. Yeah, so have we played more with the Genius recommendations for apps? It seems like, for me at least, it hasn't been looking at my account, my purchases. It's only looking at stuff on my phone. So for the most part...
Which isn't everything. So your point there is it's not everything in that you've owned.
Well, yeah. And for me, that's ideal, to be honest, because I have 800 some apps and they're not all on my phone. And
right.
Most of the apps on my phone are ones that I actually use.
Yeah, which would make sense for recommendations on your phone, right?
Right.
And this feature isn't in iTunes yet.
Which is weird. I feel like it should be in iTunes.
I think it's coming. I don't know why it's not in there. It seems like it would have been something primed to go into iTunes 9. So I don't know where the holdup would be.
I have an idea. Maybe it's that way so that Apple could control the base of users that would test this out so they can make sure there aren't any problems. So it's a feature that if you don't have an iPhone or iPod Touch, you can't even try out. I don't know.
If you don't have an iPhone or iPod Touch, you can't really use the apps either, right?
True. But you can still go browsing the App Store with as long as you have iTunes.
True. And I do like that as opposed to the Music Genius feature, you can actually say, no, you were wrong about this one, and remove it from the list. Because it has the, in the instructions above, it says swipe to remove.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So that helps out. Ooh, Bloom. Have you guys played with Bloom? It's a total rat hole. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, check out, it's a Brian Eno thing. It's a very trippy ambient.
Oh, it's sorry. You're mentioning it, and then you said it's a Brian Eno. I think I did play with that way back when, though.
It's been out for a while,
around for a long time, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's very cool. I only recently actually checked it out, but yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, I never quite understood it.
It's for stoners, I think.
Yeah,
but so, you know, I feel like the Genius recommendations, you know, I think we talked about this with Jason Snell, and, you know, it'd be much more useful if Apple could track somehow the actual usage of the apps, you know, how long you have it on your phone. And now for push apps, it, you know, those apps notify Apple when you've removed them from the phone, right? I don't know if other apps notify Apple. They might. I mean, it has the little, you know, rate this. You know, would you like to rate this while you're removing it from your phone?
Right.
I think it must. I think there's a lot of data that Apple has that, you know, they're not doing anything with yet.
Hopefully. Because that's, you know, that'd be very valuable for recommending with this Genius feature. Let's see. Anything else to talk about? What are you, has anybody seen anything cool worth mentioning in 3.1 that we haven't covered?
Not really. I finally played around with the, you know, the thing that you mentioned, remotely locking the phone through Mobile Me, and that was really cool. I was surprised at how fast it worked.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I literally did it on the site in my phone and then picked up my phone and it was locked.
Yep. Now, will it lock your phone if someone's like playing with it? If it's open and on and
unlocked? Oh, I haven't tried that. I want to try that now.
Yeah, I'm going to try that now too.
But let me know. Because I can see where that would be very cool.
Yeah. You want to take over for the podcast while we do this? Have you seen anything? No,
I'm not going to try it right now. You try it right now. But I was just saying, you saying that makes me want to try it. And I don't know why I didn't think to try that.
And so, and I haven't played with the remote lock feature because I have my iPhone and my iPod Touch both set to auto lock anyhow.
Right. You have a code on yours anyway.
Right.
Have you seen any other features that you in 3.1 that you enjoy? Obviously, we talked about the copy out of the context.
Have you guys been getting emails from anybody who's been having issues with 3.1?
I've heard a few reports from people. Yes. I didn't mention this last time, but when I went to update my phone to 3.1, it croaked on me in the middle of it. And I had to go do a full restore, and that didn't work. And I had to do another restore. That didn't work. Finally, I dropped it down into the DFU mode to restore it, and that worked fine. But I'm wondering if that was because I was running a beta version.
You also have hacked around your phone in the past, right?
Not this one. This one I haven't jailbroken.
That's a pristine one. Huh, interesting. You know, I had the same thing happen where it locked up. But again... People don't know, but before the show, I've been having issues with my MacBook Pro, my 15-inch, I think related to my FireWire audio interface where it will just freeze. And so mine just, my system froze up in the middle of the install, but I don't think that was anything to do with iTunes or 3.1. And I was able to just do the restore. You know, it just picked up where it kind of did the restore, reinstalled the, you know, and just reran the installer, and then it installed fine. So the one thing I'm getting a lot of people complaining about is the removal of the, and I never use these tools, but I think you do, Michael. So I'd be curious to hear your opinion on this, but the iStat, the erase the memory or free the memory.
Oh yeah.
Apps are all broken.
That's not a 3.1 though. That's not a 3.1 thing. They were told.
Yeah, that was Apple telling them they couldn't have that in there.
Or are you saying that people who still have that original version that lets you free memory, that doesn't work anymore?
That's what I'm telling you.
Oh, so even if you hit the, you still have the button and you hit it, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Oh, that's probably why they told them to get rid of it.
That's what I think they're telling me. I mean, I just received emails right after the 3.1 update, and they're going, my iStat free memory thing doesn't work or is broken or has
that
been taken
sense.
Away. Was it taken out of the app? They forced them to take it out of the app.
They did.
The
they told them to take it out in an update.
That's what people are complaining about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That made that application completely useless for me now. Because that's why I had it, was to do that, to manage my memory.
So I guess that was just a timing thing. They just kind of timed it around the same time as the 3.1 update.
No, it was a couple weeks before,
for a while,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did we? I guess we just hadn't talked about that. Because I didn't really start getting the emails till after the 3.1 update, so I thought it was related.
But, well, maybe they told them to get rid of it because it was going to be broken in the 3.1 update.
Yeah, so I don't know if it is broken or not.
Yeah.
For sure. If you have the old version of the app.
I have it. I haven't, and it's not installed right now, but I backed it up after I heard about that.
I accidentally overwrote mine.
Time Machine.
Hey, I have one of those.
Yeah.
Score.
Yep. Okay.
I love Time Machine. Just another rat hole side note. If you're not using Time Machine, go out and get a drive and start using it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Time Machine is fantastic.
Do we have anything else to mention in 3.1? I tried locking the phone, and it does lock if you're unlocked and playing with it. So
nice.
Yeah. So
then you can send a taunting message with the other features, but like, get off my phone.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So iSupply is reporting that they believe AT&T's exclusive deal with Apple may continue. Now, this is coming from iSupply, which is interesting. They do the hardware predictions, right?
No.
Have you heard this, Adam?
And then the internet's cried in pain.
Yeah.
Now, Michael, you work for the internet, so you can fix that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh. So many people are going to be so disappointed if that's true. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
I think it's the stupidest thing. Again, this is one of those things that I put against my financial Apple meter in, like, what is the upside for Apple in that? And you know, AT&T obviously has a vested interest and would love to have that happen. But at this point, for Apple, where does Apple sell more iPhones or make more money by extending their contract with AT&T, unless AT&T is just going to drop some huge bushels of money on Apple's, you know, send it over to one infinite loop and say, "Hey, here's billions of dollars. Don't you know, keep our exclusivity."
Well, they've invested a lot of money in their networks because of the iPhone, right?
Well, AT&T has, but again, what's the upside for Apple?
Well, they don't have to make a different version of the phone.
The network's you know, falling apart. Apple doesn't need them to launch the phone anymore. Everybody already wants the iPhone. You know, initially it was they're getting money, you know, subsidy money from AT&T. That went away. So unless they're bringing some of that stuff back or something like that, I just don't know why Apple would do that. I can't fathom why Apple would do that agreement when they could open it up and sell way more phones, you know, to those people who are never going to switch to AT&T. I know so many people are just adamant, I will never buy an iPhone. Never, ever, ever buy an iPhone as long as it's on AT&T.
Well, I think that Apple, you know, we've talked about this before. Apple doesn't want to make a different version of the iPhone, right? Supposedly, you know, they don't want to have a version just for, you know, the U.S. And that's ostensibly why they went with AT&T to begin with, as opposed to Verizon, although there were rumors that they talked to Verizon about it. And, you know, of course, T-Mobile has a suck network in the U.S.,
I think they're going to open it up to Verizon, and if they have to do a different phone, I think at this point they probably can. I think early on, I did say that early on, and I think I've changed my opinion on that at this point, again, because of the maturity of the product, how much money Apple has made off of it, and I don't think, you know, they had to get it launched, and they had to yeah. find a partner that they could launch it with that were going to give them a bunch of concessions that they wanted, that they needed to launch the device,
right,
and I
yeah.
think they're past that now.
Yeah, they can go to any carrier, and they'll let them do, you know, everything that they've done with the iPhone already. But, you know, we didn't mention this last week, but Apple did mention, Steve Jobs mentioned that 30 million iPhones have been sold. Is that right? Is that number right? I think it's 30 million. Jeff?
Oh, I'm trying to remember now. It's all a blur to me.
I wrote those numbers in my notes.
I'm pretty sure it's 30 million.
That sounds very familiar, so yeah. You might be right.
I just watched it, so I'm thinking, this is just from memory, but 30 million iPhones, that's a lot of iPhones.
That is a lot of iPhones.
So, and the last story before we get to our picks. Balmer nabs iPhone from employee, pretends to stomp device. Did you guys hear about this?
No,
yes.
At a Microsoft meeting.
Sounds like a Balmer maneuver.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So
there's a reason why he's called Monkey Boy, and it's not just because he flings his own poo.
And Chris Berlick used a fantastic image of Balmer putting this on the story. But
he did.
Just him doing an ape-like move. But let's see, at a Microsoft, what kind of Microsoft event was it at? It was a Microsoft company meeting held in Seattle. Apparently the hapless employee, I'm reading from Engadget, was trying to snap a photo of his boss when Balmer grabbed the device and made some funny comments met by boos and cheers from Microsoft's employees. Steve then set it on the ground and pretended to stomp on it before walking away, later teasing the employee during his presentation by noting that he hadn't forgotten him. Oh, that's bad.
Oh,
that is bad.
He's fired. Or well, he's already dead and in pieces in a dumpster.
We've also, I also heard, I think Berlick mentioned it in the article, that a lot of, or maybe it was just on a comment here, but someone mentioned that a lot of employees at Microsoft have iPhones. I mean, it's
that wouldn't
it makes
surprise
sense.
Me.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just, yeah, it's a very Balmer thing. There's actually a very funny photo of Steve, an alleged photo of Steve Balmer on Engadget. A very nice blurry photo right before he grabs the phone and stomps
it.
Oh my.
Oh. Okay, clearly I hadn't seen the Engadget photo till just now.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That is absolutely fantastic. Okay, so whoever created that image for Engadget, send them presents. That is fantastic.
Well, isn't it from the guy who? Oh, I didn't even see. Okay, you're laughing at the Donkey Kong
at the monkey picture.
Yeah, there's a. I didn't see that either until just now. There's a Donkey Kong. This is good. Yeah.
So go to Engadget. Yeah, the photos.
Okay, and with that, let's move on to our iPhone picks. Adam, would you like to start this week?
Oh, I have to have a pick. No, go to Jeff. I got to figure out something.
Okay, Jeff, what do you have?
Okay, so I'm trying to remember. Have we talked about the Whole Foods Market app yet?
I don't think so.
Okay, well then great. That's what we'll talk about. So Whole Foods has their own application now that will help you create like shopping lists and menus. And it's really great if you have a Whole Foods in your area and that's where you like to shop, because it's going to show products, of course, that you can get at Whole Foods. But one of the things that I think is really cool about it, even if you don't have a Whole Foods store in your area, is that you can build menus based on certain criteria. So you might say, I want to make a dinner and I have these items. And it'll say, okay, well, here's what you can do with it. Or maybe you have a friend coming over. Like if anyone ever invites me over, I'm lactose intolerant. Okay, great. So you can tell the app, show me dairy-free stuff. And then you can build menus around that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So you can say that I want this entire meal to be dairy-free.
Right.
Or I want it to be vegan.
Right. And so it'll go through. What I wish you could do is – add multiple criteria. So, you know, like maybe you're going to make it dairy-free and you want it to be low fat or high fiber. I don't know, some combination of things.
Yeah.
It'd be cool if you could do multiple things like that, but you can't. But still, being able to say, okay, I need to put together a menu that's gluten-free.
So the app is called Whole Foods Recipes, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess it is. Okay, Whole Foods Market Recipes.
That is great.
And it's free.
Yeah. Oh, Jeff, this is great.
I know you love me.
I do. Even
I
more.
Get that a lot.
So I'm playing around with it. So you can say, you know, vegan course. You want to get the main course. It actually froze up on me already, but say all, and then can you just hit search without? Yeah. Wow.
How cool is that?
You didn't even have to type anything in there. You just say, give it to me. Give me all these recipes right now.
Yeah. And then you can go through and look and go, oh, hey, I've got all this stuff already. Great. Or I need to run to the store and get this and this.
Oh, this is fantastic.
You're welcome.
Can I make this my pick of the week too?
Yeah, sure. Adam, do you want it to be your pick of the week?
No, I've got mine now. And I'm actually frankly shocked. I had to do a little research because I thought for sure we picked this one already, which was why I didn't have it on my list. But I'm going to pick it now.
All right, go for it.
It needs to be picked.
Do it.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
1Password.
Are you kidding? We haven't done that yet?
Not from my searching on the website.
Huh. Okay, go for it.
I don't know.
Tell us more about it.
Pick 1Password because I now use this all the time, and it became infinitely more usable when copy paste was added.
Right.
So if anybody uses 1Password on their Mac, and they should, I'm a total convert. I resisted 1Password for a very long time, but basically, whenever you go to a website, whenever you need to, you know, fill out a form and do a password, 1Password is a standalone app. You can put encrypted passwords, information in there. You can put credit cards. You can put everything. And it's all encrypted under one master password, one password, basically. But the really thing that makes it really useful for me is it installs a plugin into Safari, into Firefox, you know, whatever browser you want to use. And when you're on a site you need to sign up, you can click that thing and it has a strong password generator. You can generate a super strong, you'll never remember it, it doesn't matter password, you know, 16 characters with special characters and numbers, and you can set all the preferences for that. 1Password will then remember that for that website under your master 1Password, shove it into 1Password, and then the next time you come to that site, you just click the little 1Password icon. It says log into, you know, Gmail. And it will populate that password login information for you. If you haven't unlocked your 1Password keychain, it'll ask you for the master password. You do that once, and then you're good for the rest of the, you know, rest of the day. So it keeps all your data secure. It's encrypted, has syncing features, so you can get it to sync between multiple phones or multiple Macs, which I use. They have a really good tutorial for using Dropbox for doing that. What the iPhone app does is it allows you to sync all of that stuff securely over to your iPhone. So for those times when you've set up, you know, a really gnarly password, you want to use Safari on the iPhone. They don't have the plugin on the iPhone, unfortunately, but you can pop over, launch the 1Password application, find the entry, the password that you need, copy, you know, one click, copy it, go back to Safari and paste it in. So it allows you to maintain those secure passwords. Those really secure passwords and still use them on your iPhone.
And it got 4 out of 5 stars on iPhone Alley.
Oh, it's awesome.
I'm just looking through the description.
I can't live without 1Password now. And I love that it syncs everywhere. You know, I have it on my backup, so I'm never going to lose my passwords because that's one of the things, you know, a lot of people worry about. I was always worried exactly the reason I resisted it was I was always worried that if I had a different password for every website and it was this gnarly 16-digit, right, I'll never remember thing, that something was going to go south. And I've been using it probably for a year now, and I've never had a problem. I've been able to rebuild my systems. It's backed up. I have it synced to the Dropbox. Syncing is great because you put it on your Dropbox. It's encrypted. You know, if someone got a hold of it, they'd still need passwords to get into it. So,
can you sync to Dropbox, or do you have to? Is it just Wi-Fi sync only?
Well, basically, with the Dropbox, all you do is you take the 1Password keychain file and you use 1Dropbox as the repository for that.
Okay.
And you just point the app at that.
So you don't have to do Wi-Fi syncing. You can do it over Dropbox.
Yeah. So every time you make a change to the file, it just gets written to your Dropbox.
And you can also do secure notes, and you can throw stuff in like wallet items, and you can generate passwords.
And they just added the new version, I think, just added applications. So you can put all your application product keys and registrations and stuff in there.
Okay, cool.
Which I've used in the past, a piece of software called a wallet from Waterfall Software for that, which I absolutely love. Right. And I still use. I don't know if I'll switch over to 1Password for my applications yet, but
now,
I might.
What is the difference between 1Password and 1Password Pro? Because that looks like a new
product.
That
I don't remember, because they sent me an email and I just automatically upgraded to the Pro because it was like I got a deal because I was already a 1Password owner.
Well, I mean, there's 1Password Pro on the iPhone too, so I'm not sure.
Right, it's and I don't remember more, but, all the okay, Pro so features. I would just go for the Pro, whatever. Give them your money. They need it.
Okay, so 1Password
support them.
Is $4.99.
Well, they probably don't need it. It's a great app, and a lot of people use it, but I'm sure they would love to have more, and they deserve it, I guess is what I should say.
There you go. They deserve it.
1Password is $4.99, and 1Password Pro is $7.99. Those are the iPhone versions of the app. Great pick. Jeff, I just have to say again, as Adam was talking, I started playing even further. I've been, because I'm vegan, I've just been, working and all this stuff. It just, I don't have a lot of time to come up with interesting dishes to cook. And I love cooking. I just haven't had, a lot of creative ideas for making stuff. So it's just been the same thing over and over. I have to say, I want something that has tofu and noodles in it, and hit go. That is just incredible.
Isn't that just cool?
It's so great. So I'll move on to my pick. And my pick is actually by the guys at Power Rebase. We were talking about them earlier. Notify Me is an application that alerts you of... it notifies you of anything that you throw at it. So you say, I know in, 15 minutes I need to take off and pick someone up at the train station. And so I can just, instead of adding that to my calendar, which, followers of GTD know that your calendar is sacred territory. So stuff like this shouldn't really be on your calendar, because you need an alarm for it. And so this just works through the push notification service. And so you tell it, I need a notification at such and such a time, and it will alert you. It has different categories. So you can have to-dos, and you don't even have to worry about the categories. It'll default to just to-do, or you can say personal, work, school, birthday, TV show, shopping, that kind of stuff. You can have the notifications repeat daily, weekly, biweekly, monthly, yearly. It doesn't have, anything more fine than one, every day. But it works pretty well for, what I've needed so far. And it keeps track of the past reminders, recent reminders. But the cool thing, aside from, working from the push notification service and actually letting you snooze those notifications, it lets you choose how you want to start up the app. And because, again, I'm a GTE guy, I like the ubiquitous capture idea. So it actually lets you set it to automatically open in the new reminder, mode. Because, honestly, the only reason I'm going to open up this application is because I have something else I want to put into it. So as soon as I hit that icon, it comes up with a new reminder option, and I enter that in, and I jump out, and I keep going with what I'm doing. And that is it's $3.99, and it's worked pretty well for me. It makes it much easier than saying, oh, okay, I got to set an alarm for, if it's just a reminder, you don't really want to set an alarm for a reminder. You want something that reminds you, So I really like this application. And so $3.99, Notify Me is the app. It's awesome. Check it out. That is my pick. And with that, I will say that you go, if you want to get more iPhone news, tips, and reviews every day, check out iPhoneAlley.com, of course. And if you have an iPhone tip that you'd like to share with us, something cool you found in iPhone 3.1 or iTunes, something like that, hit the contact link on the side of the page. And if you want a product or an application review, do the same. If you'd like to check out the list of iPhone picks that we do on the show, go to iPhoneLA.com/podcast. You've also got the show notes there to check out. If you want to leave us feedback, podcast@iPhoneLA.com is the place to do that. And, of course, Jeff Gamet joins us from the Mac Observer, iPod Observer, JeffOrama.com, and Twitter.com/JGamet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Hey, sure thing. And as always, thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. And Adam Christensen can be found at the MacCast Podcast and Twitter.com/MacCast. Anything else you want to pimp, Adam?
Nope. MacCast.com is where you can find the podcast, and that works for me. Thanks for having me on again.
Yep, as always. And definitely follow both these guys on Twitter. Adam's got, I just saw the new iPod Nano through Jeff's stream. How cool it looks, from a third person perspective, because it's not a photograph on Apple's page. It's actually a real life iPod Nano. And of course, Adam Christensen has a bunch of great discussions going on. If you enjoy the Mac or the iPhone, he talks about good stuff on Twitter. If you want that kind of stuff, don't follow me on Twitter. Because I don't do that. It's something else. But you can follow me if you want to. Twitter.com/Michael Johnston. And the iPhone stuff, the official iPhone Alley pod. Well, the iPhone Alley Twitter is Twitter.com/iPhone Alley. And with that, another iPhone Alley podcast is in the can.
And then occasionally, I will say I'm a dental hygienist.
So what do we do? Right. Yeah, I always just say that I work for the internet.
So what are we going to do? Oh, see, that's good.
Yeah. And it really, it's very vague, but it says exactly what they need to hear.
Which is, I'm smarter than you. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. I work for the internet. What do you do? Oh, you're an architect? I'm sorry.
Ooh. He plays with rocks and sticks and pencils. Ooh. I am the internet. No.